This is the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Wednesday is supposed to be the start of the college basketball season. And I say supposed to be because we've already seen Duke, now Florida State, and Miami have their college basketball openers either postponed or, let's be honest, canceled. Or, as Joe Ovius likes to say, backburnered. You can add that to the list nationally of Baylor, Tennessee, Seton Hall, Penn State. Do you want me to continue? What are we doing, college basketball? Because I want to believe, the altruist in me wants to believe, we're putting these games on because it's about the opportunity for the athletes. They're the ones who've put in the work. They're the ones who've been on campus since the summer, going through testing protocols, isolating. They're the ones sacrificing. This should be their reward. I'm saying that as clearly as I possibly can. That's the altruist in me, and I truly believe that. We will have Bubba Cunningham on this program tomorrow, the athletic director at North Carolina. If I ask him that question, that will be his answer. It's about the opportunity. We will have Boo Corrigan, the athletic director at NC State, on this program on Friday. If I ask him that question, the answer will be, it's about the opportunity for the athletes. But I'm 45. I've been following the ACC since I was in school at NC State in the 90s. The cynic in me says this is about money. And I don't like to be the cynic. But when the powers that be in college basketball, and that includes the ACC, sets up their schedule as if 2020 is just another day, it's just another year, it's business as usual, it leads me to believe it's not really about the opportunity. That doesn't really please me. Because if it was about the opportunity, there would be more flexibility in their thinking. There would be a willingness to play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The games would be, you send four teams to one site. You play Thursday, Saturday, two teams play, right? The other group plays Friday, Sunday, just like it was the NCAA tournament. But that doesn't fit the TV windows, Joe. And that's where the money comes in. The ACC network, it's worth $1.86 billion over 12 years to the schools in the ACC. $155 million per year. You think they get that money if they don't play in the windows that are prescribed to them? I'll give you three guesses. You don't need the second two. The CBS contract for the NCAA tournament, it's worth $19.6 billion. They didn't play it last year. Just last year, the value of that deal, $980 million. Spread out over more teams, but something tells me if a couple dollars from that will keep the lights on at your house. There's 112 days until the first four is scheduled on March 16th, exactly. That's 16 weeks. Take my idea. Use it for free. You don't even have to make me the ACC commissioner. I promise. I'll waive it this time. This one's the freebie. always give them the first taste for free. Four teams, one site. Each week, knock out two games. Guess what? That's going to get you. You of 10 of those 16 weeks, and you're giving some teams a week off, shudder to think, you're going to get to 20 league games. That's going to give you a great idea for the team, for the committee that's going to select the teams that go into the NCAA tournament. Because what has the NCAA already decided about the NCAA tournament, Jonathan Rand?
Oh, it's happening.
Oh, it's happening, but it's also going to be at a single site in a bubble-style setup.
Mm-hmm.
I trust the ACC schools and the protocols that they're going through, no matter what Mike Norvell or Dabo Swinney say this week. I trust the ACC schools. And quite frankly, I think the coaches in the basketball league do as well. Trust each other. Trust your protocols. Go to a single site. Four teams. You need 10 weeks out of the 16 between now and the first four. Guess what? This is a pandemic. There are no breaks in a pandemic. There are no fans either. So what are you really losing here? Oh, you're not live in your Tuesday window? You're not live in your Wednesday window? Well, here's the alternative. You're not live at all. How about that? We had that last year. Remember? We were in Greensboro. Remember? You had the teams on the floor. Remember? I do. You want me to be selfish? I started my career where I was supposed to be covering the NCAA tournament. So guess what? It's personal to me. Because if there's no basketball, what do we have? What do we have in the triangle without it? Okay. Big football game on Friday. I hear you. I hear you. We have about four of those a year in the ACC, in the triangle. Not one of those every 4 years, as will be the case when number two Notre Dame plays number 25 North Carolina. If I sound irritated on a Tuesday before Thanksgiving, I am, and you should be, because I care deeply about ACC basketball, and I don't think the people who are running ACC basketball right now are thinking clearly about how they're going to be able to pull off a season. It's that simple. But Joe, everybody has a boss. Sure enough. But everybody should have a brain. And you should be able to explain to your boss, I don't think what we're trying to do is going to work. And you're not paying me to not work. You're paying me to solve problems. I just solved yours, ACC. Use them wisely.
Joining us now on the Heister Automotive Group hotline, it's Ruffin McNeil, who you probably know from his time either at Texas Tech or App State, or heck, coach, my neighbor Troy Richardson, he was Tim Worley's blocking back at Lumberton High School. So,
wow.
So everybody I know knows you in some way, and now you're at NC State as a special assistant to the head coach, Dave Doran. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Ruff, but I think of this as part therapist, part strategist, part mentor, part friend, right?
Yeah,
It's a unique role.
I tell you what, it's been great. It's been a great experience. You know, it was new, and I think all those words describe my place. And I would add observer. You know, just watching practice and all that at the same time. But it's been great for me. It kept me involved. And you know, I've known Dave so long, since he's 24 years old, so I've known him a long time. And most of the guys on the staff I know as well, you know. So it's been unique, but it's been fun. You know, it's basically been around the kids.
Yeah.
That's been the best. Yes, sir.
Ruffin McNeil, NC State Special Assistant to the Coach, therapist. I like to say therapist. Joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. And Ruff, I remember I was at your introductory press conference when you were hired by East Carolina in 2010. Yeah. And I remember when you said, we're going to hug them up and we're going to love them up. And I thought to myself, man, that, first of all, that's a great thing to say, right? Like, but from a football coach and from a football guy, It's like an incongruent thought process, right? We like to think of football coaches as hard and tough. And, and here you were saying, you know what? Sometimes you got to hug them up and sometimes you got to love them up. How has that philosophy helped you in more than 40 years of coaching now?
Well, you know what? It's because I am extremely demanding, maybe the best word too, as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think, you know, once kids know how much you care, then they care how much you know. That's been my philosophy. And if they know you care about them, then they'll then begin to really want to care about what you know, football-wise, life-wise. So I've always been a tough, very honest, but also very – that would not be afraid to tell the kids you love them, and then you hug them up, and then also demand that they give you their very best in everything they do, being a grown up to be a great man, or whether it's been a great student, or being a great football player. So that's how I was raised in it, and that's how Coach Dye coached us when I played for him. He was really tough on us, you can imagine. And then he loved us, and that's why he meant so much to me, just like I called Coach Dye my second dad when he was living. So.
Ruffin McNeil. Ruffin McNeil joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. And before NC State played Virginia earlier this season, Ruff, I saw this story on the Richmond website, and it was a quote from Bronco Mendenhall, and I thought, wow, I think I'd like for at some point in my life someone to say this about me. He said, he's one of my favorite people on the planet. He could admonish a player in ways I could never imagine. And they still loved him, even though he was hard on them. It's just his magical personality. That was Virginia coach Bronco Mendenhall, who you worked for a year after ECU. When you hear someone describe you that way, where do you think this gift to deal with people comes from?
You know, it's very humble. It's very humbling. First of all, Joe, very humbling. But I think that's been my method, you know, of coaching, and it's been that way from the very beginning. I've molded it and to what works, and I think it all boils down to what coaching to me is defined as: taking a player to a place that he couldn't go to him by himself. And I think you as a coach must find that way to do that. And I think you have to be able to and tell the kid what's expected, the young man what's expected, before you even coach him one day. Tell him, this is what I expect. This is what we agree on. And then I get that agreement confirmed. And then this is what's going to be expected. Now, if it's not met, then you can expect this, you know. And I think most kids appreciate it if you give them the consequences, whether it's going to be, you know, and it's very swift. And both, whether it's positive or having to make sure to do the right thing. But that was very nice of Bronco to say that. But that's probably describes me as best as I've ever been described.
Ruffin McNeil joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. Joe Ovias is off this week. And Ruff, if I want to take you back here, and at the risk of getting political here in our first radio conversation.
Okay.
I've been trying to stress to my kids, I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, that how you win matters as much as how you handle a loss, that you have to win with grace. And I bring this up to you specifically because I remember in 2013, you had your best ECU team. You had some dudes on that team, Coach. I don't need to tell you.
Yes.
Shane Carden, Justin Hardy, Zay Jones, just to name the stars on offense.
Yes,
it's 35-7 at the end of the third quarter. There are a lot of ECU fans at Carter-Finley Stadium that day. It was November. I remember it well. You could have won that game. You could have put up 70 or at least 60. And I was always curious why you didn't. Why did you – I don't want to say you took it easy, but why did you feel like you had done enough? And where did you find the grace to win the way that you did that day against a rival when probably those people in purple at Carter-Finley Stadium would have enjoyed it if you had put up a few more touchdowns? 42-28 was the final.
You know, I think the respect of the game I was raised by my mom and dad, both educators, and they both taught my brother and I humbleness and to have pride in what you do. But also, I've learned that to treat people how I would like to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I felt at
amen,
that
amen,
time,
Ruff.
You know.
Amen, Ruff.
You know, and I felt that at that time, you know, the game was in hand. And I always wanted to play the other kids who had been practicing, mm-hmm. Everyone feels a tough love. You know, even if you, whether you're a first teamer, whether you were Shane Carden or whether you were the third or fourth teamer. So everyone felt that hard, tough love that Bronco described. But so when you have a chance to give those kids reward by playing them in a game of any magnitude, to reward them for doing the things that we asked them to do, or I asked them to do personally as a head coach, I thought they needed to be rewarded. So I felt like it was a chance to play those guys and then respect for the game and my opponent. I thought that was how it was built, you know, from again, I mentioned my dad, my mom, but also with Coach Dye, mm-hmm. The people I was raised and coaching with initially, early, those guys coached me. But I felt that respect of the game and respect of my opponent, but also giving those other young people a chance to play.
I'd suggest you're probably not here today in 2020 if that game had gone differently. So the world works in mysterious ways, doesn't it, Coach?
Yeah, it really does. You know, and it's a small world. It's not as big as people think it is, you know, and I've held jobs at most of the corners of the United States, from as far west as you can go to California, you know, and as far as east. And, you know, I just think, you know, there's a thing about respect that I think gets lost a lot of times in the game. And I always felt like if, you know, we did our best and our team played their best and we were able to win the game, I thought we needed to be humble, you know, be excited for the win because wins are very hard, but also respect your opponent. Always respect your opponent and give respect to the next man over, you know. So that was big, and I think that was ingrained in me from an early age.
Ruffin McNeil joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. I'm Joe Giglio. Joe Ovius is off today. And, Coach, before I let you get out of here, NC State 6-3 this year, just as I was at your introductory press conference. I was at Dave Doran's introductory press conference.
Wow.
And I thought to myself about 2 weeks ago, this is some of Dave Doran's best work, if not his best work in Raleigh, given everything that has gone on this year with the pandemic, the coaching changes, the injury to Devin Leary. How have you seen him handle all of the adversity that he has been through this year? And I know you're going to hesitate to take any piece of that credit, but how do you think you've helped him and helped center him to keep him focused at the task at hand?
Well, I tell you, you know, with experience, you learn. And every experience is a learning experience, whether it's a beautiful one, a brilliant one, and like a victory, mm-hmm. whether it's a tough one. And I teach my kids this, my daughters this, whether it's a tough experience, a loss, you still can learn from both. So it's not really a loss if you learn from it, in my mind, it's built like that. So I think that's the first part. But what Dave has done, I thought it started back in the off season. And we've always kept in touch, just so you know,
when
from Southern Cal days through Wisconsin days through Kansas days, you know, that we've always kept in touch along the way. But I thought he did a great job. He's done a great job with the kids in the offseason, establishing, you know, that rapport and team first mentality. And then the leadership group that's within the team, the young men, the kids that I've been to be a part of, Joe, they've been magnificent. So I think that's been a big part. But this is one of the most difficult seasons in coaching.
No doubt.
And you know that.
Yep,
you know, no I mean, it's, you know, you talk about the pandemic, then the social uprise and social things that have been happening. And then are we going to play? Are we not going to play? Do kids opt out? No kid has opted out here. You know, that's amazing. You know, every kid has been a part of it. It was tough. I think Dave's been very transparent with the kids and our coaching staff. You know, Dave's got a great coaching staff. I'm I'm lucky to be around the guys, and Dave and I talk a lot about, you know, the situations and the team and those type things. But we have a great staff here, not just coaches, but support people that are all on the same page. You know, you've been around organizations, Joe, that everybody's on the same page, have the same objectives, and everybody's on the same accord. And I think that's what we have here. I know that's what we have here. And Dave's done a great job of orchestrating that, also leading the kids. And it's a daily chore. It's a daily job. And but it's been fun to see him lead us. And it's been fun for me to just be a part of it and be there to aid him whenever necessary.
Ruffin McNeil, I hope you have the very best Thanksgiving. And enjoy the end of this season. Always a great treat to talk to you, and best to you and your family.
Same here. You got my number now, so call me if you need anything. And it's been great to talk to you again. And I look forward to seeing you hopefully soon.
Yeah, me too.
On Zoom or phone call.
Me too.
Let's try that. Let's try old fashioned way one time.
Hey man.
Hey, how you doing? We shake hands and give a little bear hug or something, and then you talk to me and ask questions sitting on the couch next door. You know what I mean?
That's right.
But
hug him up
anyway,
and love him up,
bro. Take care of yourself. You take care too, Joe, and have a great Thanksgiving. I mean that.
It's time for Lauren Brownlow, that Brownlow lady. How are you today, Lauren?
Hello. Not bad. How are you?
Well, got a little worked up over some college basketball. It was good to get off my chest. But the college football playoff rankings are coming out tonight.
Nope, no.
And no. I was curious. You vote in the AP, top 25. I'm guessing your top four looks like everyone else's. Alabama number one, Notre Dame number two, probably some order of Clemson at three or Ohio State four, right? Three or four, Clemson,
Ohio
State.
I have Ohio State 2 and Clemson or Notre Dame 3 and Clemson 4. But yes, and I've considered flipping Ohio State and Notre Dame. Obviously, I would not be shocked if Notre Dame ends up being number 2. But the Buckeyes really haven't given me a reason to think that they're not exactly who I thought they were, and I still overall have a couple questions about Notre Dame. So, but yeah, other than that, yes.
My question to you, will the committee come to that same conclusion of the top four teams, or will there be a wild card in there?
It'll be interesting, right? I mean, you could see, like, the thing is, you could certainly, if they really wanted to throw everybody for a loop, because the biggest criticism of them has consistently been that they don't give any value to G5 teams, they could slide a Cincy or a BYU up in there and just throw everybody into insanity. But then of course they'd have to like back that up if either of those teams keep winning, and they wouldn't want to do that now, would they? So I doubt that they would do that, but you know, that's the only really real wrinkle I could potentially see. Maybe they switch out like a Florida and a Clemson, although I kind of doubt it, because I feel like right now people are still letting Florida and Texas A&M cancel each other out, since, you know, A&M has the head-to-head. But to me, I have Florida ahead because I think they've been playing better. So yeah, I don't think that we're going to get much in the way of drama in terms of at least who the top four is tonight. I think it'll be those four in some order.
They like to do weird stuff, which makes me wonder if Northwestern, who has won two games on the road and beaten Wisconsin, doesn't somehow miraculously end up, and it might be at Ohio State's expense, because really, what has Ohio State done?
Yeah, maybe. Although, you know, the Indiana win is still a nice win. It's still a top 10 win. You know,
true.
I mean, yes, they showed flaws, but and ultimately that's why I didn't switch them this week, Notre Dame and and Ohio State, because I was like, you know what? Like, this is still, that's a top 10 win. And I think Indiana was able to prove more or less that it's for real. That was a big, like, hey, can they hang with an Ohio State, or are they just kind of an also ran it? And they certainly hung with them for a while. So it's a good win for them, for Ohio State anyway. So yeah, I mean, they have that going for them. I don't know, man. Northwestern in the top 10. Northwestern's going to be rated way too highly.
I felt nauseous
putting them at 11.
I was going to say, I bet you they're four spots higher in the CFP than they are in the AP poll. They are number 11 in the AP poll. Lauren Brownlow, WRALSportsFan.com, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. Joe Ovias is off this week. CFP rankings come out tonight. I would just say I expect something odd to happen because it just seems to be the pattern. Locally for us, will Carolina be in the CFP rankings? Because I remember 2018, NC State wasn't getting a ton of love from AP voters, but they were, I believe, either 12 or 13 in the CFP that came out before they played Wake Forest at home on that Thursday night game in November. So I wonder if they view the Tar Heels in a similar way, because if you go by the eye test, which the committee has shown time and time again to do, I think by the eye test, Carolina is one of the 15 best teams in the country, if not one of the 10 best teams in the country.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you go by eye test and who you beat, right, I think that that is where maybe North Carolina will be able to sneak in there somewhere. I feel like the committee, it's not like they don't care about losses, but they only seem to care about them when they're good. It's like, right. Oh, yeah, they have a loss, but they lost Alabama. It's like, yeah, well, they still lost. You know what I mean? Like, that's not to say you can't mitigate that a little bit when you do your rankings, but like a loss is a loss. Like, if they still count the same.
Potentially, we just lost Lauren Brownlow. I think what she was trying to say, and we'll wait for her to come back here, is that North Carolina at 6-2 is number 25 this week in the AP poll. And I think she popped them back in there this week. And she, like many other people, have held the losses to Florida State and Virginia against the Tar Heels because, quite frankly, they should be better than their 6-2 record. But I'll let her explain more about how she judges losses and how maybe the committee doesn't.
I mean, I'm not going to fault you too much if you lose a game, even to like a competent team. Like, again, if they just had the Virginia loss, I'd probably have Carolina as like, you know, flirting with the top, you know, 15, top 10, maybe even in my poll. Like, I would not fault them too much for that. They'd be right there. The Florida State loss is just bad. It's bad, bad. So, like, there's no getting around it. And it's not like, again, I mean, we've talked about it before. It's not like they just lost on some like fluke play as time expired. Like, they got down 31-7. That's real bad. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that, but the committee tends to excuse things like that. And I think the eye test will be somewhat seductive for them as well.
Lauren Brownlow, WRALSportsFan.com, joining us here on the OG. I am Joe Giglio. And Lauren, I mentioned the Tar Heels. They have a big game on Friday. We don't get many of these in the Triangle where our team has a legitimate chance against a team that is in the national championship race. Notre Dame, number 2. I would expect to be number 2, actually, in the rankings that come out tonight. Notre Dame, number 2, comes here. This is a big game. I keep saying I don't know what North Carolina would be saving it for if they're not going to play their Super Bowl against the Fighting Irish.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's the thing, too, is like, on paper, when you look at the matchups and stuff, you don't necessarily say like, oh yeah, you can see how North Carolina has an edge there. Even their offense versus Notre Dame's defense, like they have not seen a defense this good. They just haven't. So you don't look at it in any way and say like, oh yeah, Carolina can exploit Notre Dame in X place. Like, you just don't. But at the same time, like, I was there when they played that game against Clemson, and that was a worse North Carolina team, although you could argue the defense is a little bit better, or at least the same. The offense has certainly gotten way better since then, but they hung right in there with Clemson and you know, arguably should have beat them or could have gone to overtime at the very least. So, you know, what I think you did learn from that game, though, is that North Carolina had to play very well and Clemson had to help, right? And I think Notre Dame's going to have to help. And if Notre Dame is not obliging, then it's still going to be like, I think it's going to play out like I think it probably should play out, which is that North Carolina's defense is probably going to struggle to get stops and Notre Dame's defense will be able to do just enough to keep North Carolina from scoring too many points.
One thing that gives me pause about Notre Dame in this game for North Carolina is I do feel like this version of UNC is very similar to the 2017 NC State team.
Yeah.
And the one team NC State really had problems with that year was Notre Dame. And it was on both fronts. It was the defensive line. It was the offensive line. They just got manhandled in a game up at Notre Dame, which I knew NC State was in trouble when Nyheim Hines got off the team plane with a wool hat on. And I was like, oh boy, this is not, they don't want to be here in November for this game. Might have been October, but anyway, I wonder if North Carolina runs up against the same problem in terms of this is just a much better group than they're used to playing up front.
Yeah, my concern for them offensively, and this is really the only one, but it's still a decent one, is that I think that their O-line is still a year away from being, from making this offense from a really, really good one into a like dynamic, world record shattering, like unstoppable force, right? I just think that that O-line is still a year away. It's pretty thin. It's got some inexperience at spots. And, you know, we saw what Virginia did against it, and they have a pretty solid front. And I was surprised NC State wasn't able to give them more problems, quite frankly. But maybe that's a harbinger for like, okay, if the O-line plays like they did against NC State, against Notre Dame, maybe they have a chance. But Notre Dame's front is a different beast, like you said. And I don't know if their O-line is quite ready for, I mean, no pun intended, although slightly intended, prime time in this situation. And go. I think that Sam Howell could be under quite a bit of duress.
Let's welcome now to the OG, one of our favorites, Jordan Cornette from the ACC Network. You can see him every Saturday on The Huddle from 10 o'clock in the morning till noon. Jordan, welcome to the show. I think you know why you're here.
It feels like it's going to be a pretty big week. I feel like I'm on here just because you guys miss me and you want to have me on, Joe G.
Yes.
O's not around, so you need another guy to chop it up with. That's why you're having me on, right? That's the reason?
Yeah. No, huge week for college football in the Triangle. We don't get many games like this. We have
True.
Number 25, Carolina, on Friday, 3:30. They get the A team, too, from ESPN, Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, and they're playing number 2, Notre Dame. Jordan Cornette played basketball for Notre Dame 2001 through 4 when they were back in the Big East. We don't talk about that, though, because you're the front-facing man for the ACC Network. However, when we need a Notre Dame perspective on this show, you are the man we turn to.
So, always here for you.
Yes. So on a scale of 1 through 10, your concern level about Notre Dame tripping after probably tonight being named at number 2 team in the country by the CFP rankings, your concern level 1 through 10 of Notre Dame tripping and losing at Carolina on Friday?
76.5.
Wow.
I mean, very, very high. Very high. And look, ultimately, I think Notre Dame's going to win this game. That's where I put my faith in on this one. It's not blind faith because of the fact that I'm an alum. It's just it's a very scary game for Notre Dame. It's a very high-powered offense. We saw what Clemson was able to do versus Notre Dame. Notre Dame ultimately won that game. Notre Dame was able to take out Travis Etienne for the most part, which led them, in my mind, in a lot of ways, to victory and what felt like a shootout down the stretch. This Carolina offense is different. It's one, when it's humming, it is really humming. And it's not one running back. It's two-star running backs at Carter and Williams. There's a lot of wideouts that make plays for them. Big chunk plays, and their quarterback is one of the most exciting quarterbacks to watch in all of college football in Sam Howell. So I look at Notre Dame, and I trust the fact that they are able to somewhat limit a star running back, but two-star running backs and a quarterback who goes out there and lets that thing fly with capable guys, it's reason to be scared, especially coming off a 2 weeks for both teams to prepare, two impressive coaching staffs. It's on a collision course to be an incredibly interesting game. And, oh, by the way, North Carolina's defense, which I think is incredibly suspect, gets two guys back that are very important in that secondary. Storm Duck is immense if he's healthy and able to play. And so is Kyler McMichael, two guys that have been out for the last 6 weeks. And in a lot of ways, maybe that's why they haven't been as good defensively. Those guys coming back against those big receivers from Notre Dame, yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot I'm nervous about.
Jordan Cornette from the ACC Network joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. All right, so my thought process on this game, Jordan, is Notre Dame has the best defensive line that North Carolina has seen, and they have the best offensive line that North Carolina has seen. However, with right guard Tommy Kramer out and center Jarrett Patterson out, is that still the case for what really is a strength for Notre Dame, their offensive line?
Well, it feels like it's become offensive line you over these last probably decade, to be honest, and you could probably even go back further than that. So it'll test the depth. I mean, those are two flat-out stars, two of the best at their position in all of college football. And do they have the depth to feel like it's a seamless transition in this game? We'll see. But I'll say this. Going back to the concern factor in this one, everything that Notre Dame does starts with that offensive line. They play a power game. They're built old school. They're not out there with all these speedsters, although it's the most speed Notre Dame's had in years. But they want to get the big uglies up front. They want to control the line of scrimmage to activate a run game, to chew clock. And then when Ian Book has the opportunity to take shots, he's opportunistic in executing them. That was the game plan we saw versus Clemson. It'll inevitably be the game plan here. And when they're able to control that clock, it allows the rest of the defense to go out there and shine and excel at a high level. You take away two key cogs out of five to that offensive line, and all of a sudden it feels a little bit more frenzied than it typically does going into a game like this. That being said, Ian Book, my confidence as it pertains to the quarterback, is as high as it's ever been. That running game led by Kyren Williams is still a special run game. But you're going to look at that offensive line and think, Notre Dame's bread and butter has some spots that may be holes. How does that depth answer the call? Because it's going to be a heck of a challenge.
Jordan Cornett, ACC Network, joining me here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. Joe Ovias is off this week. And all right, so Jordan, I'm a Heisman Trophy voter. And I'm not going to lie to you. I've watched Ohio State. I've watched Clemson. I've seen Notre Dame. But I'm not as closely as some of those other teams. Am I crazy, or should I be paying more attention to Kyren Williams as a Heisman Trophy candidate?
Wow.
And I know I'm talking to a biased person here, but if you think about it, other players have stumbled, or Trevor Lawrence, in his case, hasn't been able to play because of COVID issues. But should I be talking more and considering more about voting for Kyren Williams for Heisman Trophy?
I think it's a worthwhile conversation. It's one that you're not hearing anywhere. So you know I enjoy those kind of conversations. When somebody pops up something and goes, yeah, it wasn't really on my radar. But you go back and look at the wins and you see what kind of performances Kyren Williams had going for over 100 yards in the majority of those, and how that offense is built towards him being kind of the leader of the offense as he goes through the Notre Dame team, again, on the backs of that offensive line, obviously. But no Heisman is going to get – there's never going to be a Heisman winner that's the offensive lineman. So, so looking at it, you could make that argument, especially because of how many games they played. I mean, this goes back to the CFP argument for me and why I truly believe this conference deserves two teams if it plays out as we're projecting it to, with Clemson and Notre Dame meeting at the end of the season. And how that game goes, we shall see. But I believe if Clemson beats Notre Dame in ACC championship game, for the amount of games – the ACC has played, and I think they've been able to play 93% of their games. They're simply out there more, and I think there should be an advantage rewarded for the fact that they've been able to fight the attrition, go out there and play more games than these other conferences. Kyren, to be able to go out there week in and week out, perform at the high level he has for the number two team in the country, who knows if it's number one at some point this year, it's always best player, best team in the Heisman conversation. Isn't Kyren Williams best player on Notre Dame? So I like the conversation.
Jordan Cornett, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. We're talking about Notre Dame and North Carolina. They play on Friday at 3:30, the day after Thanksgiving. This is a spotlight game for both Notre Dame and North Carolina. In UNC's second year, on the second go-round under Mac Brown, they're 6-2. I think we can both agree, at worst, they should be 7-1, Jordan. But I like to say everybody plays a Super Bowl. And what I mean by that is they have their best game in the best moment. This has to be what UNC's been saving it for, right? Like, if you're Notre Dame, you have to expect North Carolina's best effort on Friday, correct?
Well, of course. I mean, North Carolina loses to Florida State. You go, what's going on? Like, how does this happen for a North Carolina team with all this expectation? And then you look at it and say, it's still a great year. Look at their record. Yeah. But people were expecting special, and we both know that, Joe G, coming into this one. They were thinking special season, not just really good year, special year with all that's returning, with all that talent. A win versus Notre Dame, and it still doesn't guarantee them a spot in the ACC championship game or anything like that, but it gives them momentum going towards the New Year's Six bowl game, and that makes it a special year. If you beat Notre Dame the one year in the conference, the one thing that Clemson couldn't do during the regular season and propels you down that kind of path, it's huge. And we saw what this North Carolina team was able to do. Couldn't get over the threshold last year, losing to Clemson 21-20, but they got up for that game. They got up against one of the nation's best last year. It's going to be a lot of juice with this one because they're able to take a deep breath, recalibrate, and prepare for this. It wasn't just next game on the schedule. There's 2 weeks in between games for them to prep for this game. It's on a Friday in the afternoon, right around a holiday. All eyes are going to be on this game more so than ever. So they're really leaning into this. Mac Brown was brought there for this kind of buzz, and they firmly have the nation's attention in this one. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Jordan Cornett, ACC Network, before we let you go, man. I look at what has happened this year in the ACC, and I think to myself, under best-case scenario, if Notre Dame runs the table and then wins the national championship, would they be more inclined to just drop the mic and say, you ain't ever getting that back from me? Or would that lead them to say, you know what, this whole being in a conference thing, it ain't that bad?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that's going to go on for a long time, Joe G.
Right.
And as it should, but I'll say this. Notre Dame covets the ability to do what they can do because college football's allowed them to. Financially, it's allowed them to be independent, play in New York, play in L.A., play overseas, do all these things in these markets that appease their big money boosters and allow them to flex the muscle with the contract with NBC, albeit not nearly as lucrative
right.
as what it would be if they joined a conference. But the ability to do that, as long as they still have a place in the CFP like they had in 2018 when they lost to Clemson, they're still going to do those things. Now, if that's taken away from them like it was this year that caused them to have to join the ACC, Notre Dame owes a lot to Commissioner Swofford for giving them this lifeline, and Notre Dame's been able to run with it. It's been mutually beneficial for both sides. I'll tell you this, Joe. There is a real shot that Notre Dame is back next year because of the fact that this COVID era, do you see a finish line? Do you know what the financials are with any of these schools? And do you know if Notre Dame will have the flexibility
yeah.
to be an independent come next year? So I'll say this. It's not necessarily going to be goodbye at the end of this year, and Notre Dame's brought a lot of energy and excitement. Another year and even more of that conversation gets you closer, Joe, to it's been pretty good for Notre Dame for now a couple years. Does that make them consider this a little bit more? It's really hard to break up with somebody after 2 years. A little bit easier to do it after 1 year.
Yeah, once you move in, you know, now all of a sudden you got a toothbrush in the bathroom.
Everybody hates to move, man. Like, you don't want to call your buddy, see who's going to come over and help you out to move stuff. You don't want to pay all that money to a moving service. It just makes it a little bit more interesting if Notre Dame does have their hand forced to do this for a second year. That conversation intensifies in a way that I don't think it does this year. So it's something to hold on to. I don't think by any means would it be a miracle if Notre Dame joins this thing. I just think people aren't connecting dots like they should be. There's a real chance this could happen because we don't know what the climate holds and the future holds.
Jordan Cornett, you can watch him on Saturdays on The Huddle on the ACC Network, 10 o'clock in the morning till noon, right up until kickoff there. Appreciate you spending some time with us, Jordan, and I hope you have your lucky pants on Friday.
Yeah, I got lucky pants, lucky boxers, TMI. I apologize, but we're doing socks. We're doing all of them. It's a big one.
Enjoy it, my friend. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Joe.
With our second visit with Jeff Hafley, Boston College coach. Jeff, how are you today?
How you doing?
I'm doing well, other than giving you the wrong number for the studio. That's the second time today that I've done that. Can you tell I'm
That's
new to
right,
radio?
It's all good. I thought you were trying to tell me something after
you
lost a couple games.
No. So, Jeff Hafley, Boston College coach, joined us before his first college game this year with the Eagles. They're 5-4 now. They play Louisville on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Catch that game on the ACC Network. So, Jeff, we talked to you before your first game. How has the reality of the first 9 games compared to your expectations?
It's tough to say. It really still hasn't hit me. It's kind of with everything going on and not much time to think about much. It's kind of been game to game, doing the best we can. But just overall, really proud of the team. You know, we were one of the only teams that went 9 straight. We still have not had a positive case since we've been back with COVID. And just give the guys a ton of credit for their effort, their buying, and their love for each other. You know, we won a couple games and played some opponents really tough that were obviously Clemson and Notre Dame, and finally got a break after last week, and just excited to be able to play 2 more games and get better.
Jeff Hafley, first-year coach at Boston College, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. Joe Ovius is out this week. And Jeff, you mentioned the 0 positive tests. You mentioned it, so I'm not jinxing it, but how have you been able to manage that as a program? Because you've seen so many problems across the ACC. Obviously, nobody's trying to get into COVID issues, but how have you guys been able to manage it so systematically?
Well, I think we got a great protocol from our doctors to trainers to the staff, but most importantly, just the buy-in from our players, the respect they have for one another, that they're their belief in each other and love for each other and wanting to play and protect themselves and not walking into a dorm room they're not supposed to, or walking into a party or a restaurant or a bar that they're not supposed to be in, and just sticking together and kind of having a pact that we were going to do the best we can and try to protect one another. But at the same time, we know there's also been some luck involved. I mean, truthfully, every time we do get tested, I wake up and wait for that email, and I know what could happen. So we're very grateful and blessed, and we're just doing the best that we can every single day.
Jeff Hafley, first-year coach at Boston College. The Eagles are 5-4 this year. They take on Louisville on Saturday, 4 o'clock, joining us here on the OG. All right, Jeff, your background is on defense. BC was a little bit of a mess last year on defense, 101 in scoring defense. You're up to 51 this year. What have you been able to do to improve that group the way that you have in your first year?
Well, I think the biggest thing is our staff has done a good job of giving these guys confidence. I think you can see they're having fun when they're out there. They're running around, and, you know, we're not trying to slow them down. So with COVID and not really having a lot of time to install a lot of stuff, we're being pretty simple. And we're relying on fundamentals and technique, and we're trying to improve the fundamentals and technique, which personally I think are more important than any blitz or any coverage that we could come up with. So we decided this year to go that route and let the guys line up and study the offenses we're playing and play 100 miles per hour and try to do the best we can, you know, keeping the right leverage, getting off blocks, tackling, covering, put our eyes in the right place, finishing on the ball. And ultimately, our guys are playing fearless, and they're not afraid to make mistakes. And that's what we believe defensive football is all about.
Jeff Hafley is the pride of Montvale, New Jersey. He's joining us here on the OG. And you mentioned after the Notre Dame game, Jeff, that your quarterback, Phil Jurkovec, had a shoulder injury in the Clemson game. But he played against Syracuse, played against Notre Dame. Do you have an update on Phil? Will he be able to play against Louisville this week and for your final, looks like, two games?
Yeah, you know, he played really well against Clemson. And on the last play of the game, we had the ball with a chance to win,
yeah,
and he got sacked and came down really hard on it. And I didn't say anything because I wanted to protect him. And he really didn't even practice the week we were playing Clemson, only threw the ball on Friday. But he wanted to play, and we played him and didn't really throw the ball that much, as you could see. And, you know, he felt a little bit better going into the Notre Dame game, practiced a little bit that week. And you could tell he made some great plays in that game as well, but was still a little off, but felt way better. I think the week off really helped, and he practiced today, and he looked great, and he looks like himself again, and there's no more pain. So I think he's healed up and ready to go, so we're excited. But it's just, again, for what this kid has done in such a short period of time and then playing two games with a pretty major injury, just really impressed and proud of the kid.
Yeah, that's not easy to do, transfer from one Power 5 program to another. That transition can be difficult, especially when you're trying to assimilate to new teammates. How has he been able to kind of ingratiate himself to his new teammates?
Well, the cool part was how he came in. It was kind of, you know, being seen but not heard, trying to win the job and earn the job and just be one of the guys, you know, kind of taking a backseat a little bit with the leadership role until he felt like, you know, he was the guy. And I respect the way he came in. He, you know, he kept his mouth shut and he worked every single day. He's here every night, 9:30. You know, with our offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, trying to learn a scheme and do the best he can. So I just love the way he approached it. And I just saw the confidence building and the fun in the playing the game. And I know I keep saying that, but I want these kids to have fun. We're playing football in one of the hardest years of our lives. So this has got to be like our getaway and our break, you know, and he's just enjoying himself and having fun.
Jeff Hafley, Boston College football coach, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio, and it may not have been explained to you, Jeff, but I am an ACC bowl expert. Your team is in position to be in a bowl this year. Is there a game that you're interested in playing and that I could put in a good word for you with?
Well, you're the expert. I'd like one where, you know, the weather might be a little bit nice and,
okay,
and get a good opponent. And, you know, truthfully, if we get a chance to play another game, I think it would be so important for our team, just in the development, the foundation. So, you know, I'm not one to be picky, but if you could somehow make it a nice warm place where I could feel some sunshine and maybe not look so pale and tired, I'd appreciate it.
Nice warm place. Then I'm gonna you're a Jersey guy. I'm gonna cross off the Bronx then, Yankee Stadium.
Don't do that. You
okay.
that you gotta understand. To me, the Bronx and New York and New Jersey, that is a nice warm place.
Okay.
You know, I didn't say it had to be at a beach. Like, Jersey's nice and warm all the time, so is New York. So we're good to go.
Jeff Hafley, Boston College coach, joining us here on the OG. All right, before we get to the shenanigans of this program, The first college football playoff rankings come out tonight. You've seen two of the really good ones in Notre Dame and Clemson. Do you think they'll both be in the top four tonight when the rankings are released for the first time? Or actually, do you think they deserve to be there?
I do. And I say that, you know, obviously being a coach of a team last year that made the playoffs, and seeing Clemson and Notre Dame both in person this year, I do think they both deserve to be. I mean, Clemson playing without Trevor. I know the backup, the big number five there. I can't pronounce his last name yet, but I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm. Uwe Angalili. Really,
yes, you've been practicing. He's going to be a superstar.
Yes.
But you get Trevor back there, and I mean, Trevor's one of the best players I've ever coached against in college football. So I think they both deserve so. I'm really impressed with Notre Dame. I think they're well coached. They're really big and strong up front, and they play really good defense and special teams. So, you know, I'd be surprised if they weren't.
You mentioned where you were last year, and Jeff Hafley is the first-year coach at Boston College. Look, the Big Ten is going to be looked at differently by different people, and I'm interested in your perspective. Obviously, they've played fewer games, but it's kind of hard to deny the talent that the Buckeyes have. What are your thoughts on how the Big Ten and the Pac-12 should be treated in this playoff process?
You know, truth, I haven't really seen the Pac too much because of the limited games, and I haven't been, you know, at home very much. Watching the Big Ten just from, you know, being in it, I still think the Buckeyes are tough. I mean, that offense is so explosive. They're really well coached. They're playing good up front on defense, and, you know, they're going to be a team that's tough to beat. They have playoff experience. They have a quarterback who I think is exceptional, and I think Ryan Day is one of the better coaches in college football, so I'd be surprised if they weren't in there as well.
You could still have some BC pride for Ryan Day, right?
I got pride for Ryan Day because he's my friend.
I know.
He gave me a great opportunity, and shoot, you know, we talk weekly, and we both root for each other, you know, so I can't say who I'm going to root for in the playoffs because, you know, now I got Clemson and Notre Dame here in the same conference, but you know I'm a big fan of Ryan.
I decided, since we are in the holiday week, the true holiday of this season, Thanksgiving, not Christmas, we will have a countdown of Jonathan Rand's greatest hits. We had a little bit of Drake yesterday.
We did.
We also had Prince yesterday.
Yep, some Purple Rain for Notre Dame.
So
all on the Twitters.
We're going to go back to Drake today.
We are.
Because, well, when we were whittling down all of your hits, Rand, we could not exclude this one. Would you like to set it up even more?
Yes, this is about former NC State head men's basketball coach Mark Gottfried, just trying to get his money from the NC State buyout. Is that what it kind of was, basically?
Yeah. When he was fired in 2017, he had an agreement. NC State stopped making payments on that agreement, which is not how things work legally when you have them in a contract anyway. So, and he's still waiting for that money, so we'll see how that turns out. But when that news came out, you came up with this ditty.
Got man said he wants his money. Said it stopped in 2018, this ain't funny. He been out in Cali like he's on vacation. Leaving the pack with a notice of allegations. Whoa. NCAA got investigation mounted. The season like the dunk from DSJ, it never counted. Was the go for cause, but got man has objections. Cause at first the phrasing was lack of direction. Got man, he just complaining. Says the pack just has to do a little explaining. Can't go back, so do what you said you were gon' do. It'd be sweet like those 16s that took us all to. It got good odds like a Richard Howell foul out. Got man, he just wants his buyout. Got man, made his terms expressly. Still wish he would have done more with Brown and Leslie.
That,
oh man,
is a winner.
That was a lot.
That is a winner.
Love you, Richard Howell. Big Rich.
So, that was a good one.
Thanks. I like that one. It was good.
I think your lyrics stood out in that one.
Oh, yes.
The next one, and we are going through Jonathan Rand's greatest acapella of the news hits. We are now up to number 3 in the countdown. This one is a personal favorite of mine.
Yes.
This is an Old Dominion song. And Joe Ovius and I decided, I don't know, probably about 2 weeks into the NFL season, there are a certain group of people who follow NC State. Sports Channel 8 is one of them. Pack Pride, our friend Corey Smith at Pack Pride is another, who will tweet using the hashtag PackPros. And normally, it'll be like a Monday night game where Jacoby Myers does something and you see, hey. And Joe has turned this into an imaginary pickup line.
Yeah.
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl.
You see Jacoby Myers on Monday Night Football? Yeah. Played football. NC State. Nyheim Hines? Oh, yeah, babe. He did that back off, round off, back when he was at the Wolfpack.
Mm-hmm.
Pack Pros.
Pack Pro.
Garner, actually.
He a Trojan.
So we decided to turn Hey Girl, Pack Pros into this Old Dominion song.
Just imagine yourself at the bar, Julio. Not now, obviously.
Hey, girl.
What's up?
I know it's late, but I figured you'd be up.
Nah,
I'm all right. Just thought you might want to know what happened tonight. That game came on, and what I saw on the field made me go numb. Guess who kept scoring for the Colts? Let me tell you where they came from. Girl, you know they're Pack Pros. Gotta make sure everybody knows. So many people in the league don't know what to do. We're not just QBU. Nyheim diving for the pylon cam. Who cares about Phil's big fam? Looks like being in a rally was the way to go. I don't know if you heard this, but they're all Pack Pros.
Hey, girl.
How that's not number one,
man,
I am not sure.
It's time to play You're Full of S***, Giglio. Listen, I've known Joe has been full of S*** since 1975, so this is old news to me. Here's Joe Ovius with the rules, but I can already tell you, Giglio is definitely full of S***, and I should know, I'm his mother.
Yes, 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 Giglio, you are correct. Thank you so much, Nora. I am not Joe Ovius, but I can still hold the fort down, I do believe. We are playing You're Full of It, Giglio. We have three contestants. We've got David in Bahama. David, what's going on?
How you doing, man? What's going on?
Good, good. Scott in Burlington. Scott, what's up?
Hey, hey, how's it going?
All right, man. And lastly, but not least, we got Derek in Raleigh. Derek, how's it going, bud?
It's going well. How's it going?
We are doing really well, really well. No Christmas music this week since Ovius is out. That's against the rules. However, we will still play You're Full of It, Giglio. Feel like all three of you guys know the rules, but just in case, Joe Giglio has some trivia, some stats. If you think what he says is true, don't say anything. It's fine. Silence is your friend sometimes. However, if what he says, if you think it's false, if you think he's making it up, shout out just your name and let Nora do the rest.
You're full of s***. Giglio.
Everybody understand the rules?
Yep.
Awesome. Good. Awesome. We'll turn it over to Joe. Let's go, Giglio.
All right, gentlemen. PJ Walker won his first NFL start. Yes, he did. 20-0 for the Carolina Panthers on Sunday over the Lions. Tom Brady, Tommy, won his first NFL start. Yes, he did. Patriots beat the Colts 44-13 in 2001. Speaking of the Colts, Peyton Manning won his first NFL start.
Scott. David.
Scott.
You're full of s***, Giglio.
Absolutely, Scott. I hope you like queso and burritos because Peyton Manning and the Colts lost 24-15 to the Dolphins in Manning's NFL debut in 1998. Congratulations.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio Show Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.